I think everybody's been saying all week, you know, oh, Fred can do that. Maximum likelihood will do that. Oh, that'll be solved with maximum likelihood. So I think there's a high anticipation that you are now going to solve all the remaining problems we have, Fred. So thanks very much.
Yeah, well, I would like to thank the organizers, but I would like to not thank all the other speakers who have given the impression that maximum likelihood methods can solve bad biochemistry, bad heterogeneity, all kinds of problems. So what I want to do here is mostly talk about the theory and show you some simple examples to give you an idea of what's under the hood in the method. So what a mathematician would like to do is to say, how do we do 3D reconstruction anyway? We have a stack of images, and we want to do, let's say, a set of reconstructions. And a mathematician would say, well, let's optimize some well-defined quantity. So I think Powell has a way that you actually do this by least squares. Other methods seem to sort of maximize the energy in the reconstruction. And the maximum likelihood method tries to maximize the probability of you getting the right result. The probability of getting the right result is actually, among statisticians, a controversial issue. That is, you're trying to estimate a model given by these parameters theta, and one group of statisticians would say, well, this model is a Platonic ideal, and we have random data, but we're trying to estimate this ideal thing, and therefore theta is not a random number, so you can't talk about its probability. But I'm going to gloss over that issue and just say that it turns out that this is also difficult to compute, and so people often compute the inverse. Now, what is this? This is the probability of the model given the data. And what people are often computing is the probability of the data given the model. And this quantity goes by a special name. It's called the likelihood. And so you say the likelihood of the model is the probability that you got the data you got given the model, and then you optimize the model to change the value of this likelihood. It's kind of backwards thinking. Now, it turns out that if you belong to the class of statisticians who say that you can talk about the probability of a model, here's what you would say. Bayes' theorem says that this quantity is related to the likelihood times a couple other quantities that are also kind of philosophical objects. What is the probability that you got the particular data set that you got? Well, we don't know, but it doesn't depend on the model, so we can say that's a constant. But then there is this object, what is the probability of the particular model that you're using? And that also might be a kind of philosophical object. So the maximum likelihood people would say, let's just ignore that term. That term's a constant. We'll just optimize that. And that's how you do maximum likelihood estimation. Now, some other people say, well, we could put prior information into this. Maybe we know that the thing that we are reconstructing has certain properties, like, if it were high resolution, that the stereochemistry makes sense. Or we have some sort of prior information. So in that case, what you can do is you can say, I have prior information, and then I do my experiment, that is, I gather my data, and then I combine these two bits of information to get what's called the a posteriori estimate of the model. And so that's what this MAP estimate is. Is it optimizes this product, the product of these two terms here, sort of saying, well, I have some prior information, and then I'm going to include the experimental data into it. So I'm only going to talk about this version, but you can see that this version is actually pretty easy to include by just adding in that prior probability. So let's start with a really easy example. Let's have a set of independent Gaussian random numbers, and we want to find the mean and the standard deviation. So here's how you would do it in likelihood style. You write down the likelihood. And so you say, what is the probability of observing the first data value, assuming that it belongs to this distribution? Well, it is first the measurement resolution, epsilon, times the probability density given by this distribution. So this product gives you the probability of actually winding up with this particular value. And then you just multiply that by the same quantity for the second value up to the nth value, because they're all independent, and that's the likelihood. Now, the likelihood is a very, very small number, because each of these are smaller than one, and if you have, you know, 1,000 of these, then you have a small number raised to the 1,000. So it's a very small number, and so we'll talk about a trick for that in just a moment. So anyway, so we are assuming just a simple Gaussian distribution, and another way of representing this problem, of course, is to just take, you know, my, I think it was 4,000 numbers, plot a histogram, and you can fit a histogram. Turns out that this maximum likelihood method does better than fitting histograms. So because this number is incredibly tiny, people like to take the logarithm of it, and that makes things a little bit easier, because it turns this product into a sum, and so you have a sum of terms, one for each measurement, and you just take the log of this thing. And if you write out what this looks like, it's the log likelihood is some constants times the sum of the squares. Okay, so here's that same equation written again. So what do we do? Well, we want to maximize the log likelihood, because maximizing the log is the same as maximizing the function itself. So let's see, what did I do here? Same equation. Yeah, okay. Same equation. So we set the partial derivatives to zero to find the maximum, and here's what we get. The mean is just the mean, that is the center of the distribution, is just the mean of all of the data elements, and the estimate of the variance is just the sum of the squares, squared deviations. And so, I mean, this is really easy. It just says, you know, this is exactly what you would think you ought to do, is just, you know, add up all the numbers, compute the average of the squared deviations. And so maximum likelihood isn't such a big deal. All right, but let's take a harder problem. Let's say that we have a set of numbers that is a mixture of two Gaussian populations. So, you know, some of the numbers are picked from a population with a mean of zero, and the other is a population with a mean of three. And so then what I can do is I can write down what the probability density is of finding any given value, and it's the sum of these two components, where F1 and F2 are each one of these Gaussian distributions. And so the whole log likelihood looks something like this. Now, this thing isn't so easy to differentiate with respect to mu1, mu2, sigma. It's not, you're not going to easily get the solution to finding those parameters. So what are we going to do? Well, let's think a little more about the problem. Suppose we had not just this list of numbers, but we also had some kind of flag that told us whether this number was taken from the distribution centered on 3 or the distribution centered on 0. So this z element would just tell us which of those two populations any given number was drawn from. Well, then it's really easy. We can then just get the mean by just computing the mean of all of the values that belong to the z equals 0 class or the z equals 1 class, and we can do the same thing with the variance. So it would be really easy if we had this extra information in interpreting this distribution. And this is one of the key ideas in the way that people actually maximize likelihood in complicated problems. So in general, we don't know this secret variable. We call it a hidden variable, but why not try a trick? Let's try to estimate the value of this variable. So what we do is we say, I have an estimate of the mean and the variance of each of these two distributions. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to use my present estimate to sort of classify each one of these numbers into one or the other class. But instead of doing a hard classification, I am going to make it fuzzy. I'm going to say this is the probability that z was 0, that is, it belonged to this class. This is the probability that z was 1, that is, it belonged to that class. Okay, so it turns out that if I do that right, I can come up with the right answer. So here's how it works. It's an iterative process. So I start off. Here are my two halves of the distribution. This is the switching function. This is my soft classification function. And so what happens is one way of thinking about this is I take my observed distribution, and then I weight it by this z function. And that gives me this sort of truncated distribution. And then what I can do is I can compute the mean and standard deviation of this truncated distribution and do the same thing for the 1 minus z part. And so I compute the mean and standard deviation of that mean and standard deviation of the other side. And what happens is that my mean moves over. This mean moves over to a better place. I do the same kind of thing, use my soft switching function, do the same kind of thing, and eventually, after several iterations, I reach a place where the switching function times my distribution comes up. This weighting then gives you what looks like a perfect Gaussian distribution. Its center is on the right place, and you get the right answer.
So the switching function changes what's changing. How are you changing the switching function?
Right. So I didn't show it really carefully. So what happens is I should have put some kind of subscripts on this. So the switching function is computed with these probability densities gotten from the previous round. So I start out with this guess that I have a mean of 3 and a mean of minus 3 and a mean of 3, and I go and I compute the switching function on the basis of those. It doesn't work very well, but it turns out that if I then compute the mean out of this modified distribution, I'll get closer. And there's a theorem, a very fancy theorem by Dempster, Laird, and Rubin that proves that if you do this, it actually is guaranteed to give you a higher likelihood every time. Pretty cool. Okay, so... here's now a more formal formulation of what I just told you. I have a set of observed data. So in our case, you know, these might be experimental images. And then there's a set of hidden variables, like those switch variables that I was using in the last slide. And I'm thinking about a case where if I knew all of these, including the hidden variables, it'd be really easy to compute the overall probability of this combination of observed and hidden variables. And so one way of thinking about this is to say, well, I can just use an identity in statistics and say, well, the log likelihood is going to be this thing, which I claim is easy to compute, times the probability of the switch variables. So this is what I was doing last time. I'm computing the switch variable based on all the other things that I know. And I can get the likelihood by doing this integral over all the switch variables. So that's actually, that's in effect what I was doing last time. So this is now the description of our problem, which is this is a set of images. All these hidden variables might be the set of alignment parameters. Okay, I don't really, in the end, care about what is the value of each alignment parameter of each image. All I care is about getting the getting theta, which is going to be my final volume. So these are hidden variables whose values I really don't care. Turns out that it's easy to compute the probability of the images if I include those hidden variables, and so I can do this to compute the likelihood. Now the problem is. Maximizing this is not simple. This is another one of those cases where you go and you try to take the derivative and you can't. And the problem is we're trying to maximize with this with respect to something like a million parameters, the value of the density in each voxel of a reconstruction. Okay, so there is this this powerful algorithm, which I was using before, is called the EM algorithm. So in the rest of this talk, EM is not electron microscopy. It is expectation maximization. And this algorithm has two conceptual steps. Okay, so you have an old value of the parameters, and you compute this quantity. It is the log of this probability that I claim is easy to compute, probability of the complete data. And then you you make a weighted average of that, weighted by the probability of z, which are the hidden parameters, and you just integrate that over all values of the hidden parameters, and then you solve this equation. It turns out that this often is much easier to solve than finding the maximum of the likelihood itself. Okay. Please interrupt me with questions. I'd much rather answer questions than to tell you what I'm telling you. Okay, so I claim that this is easy to compute. Well, okay, so here's an example of how this probability function might look. So here's the x, it's an image, and here are the z's. In our case, the z's would be the five parameters involving orientation and translation, plus another parameter which might say which volume did this image belong to, which different conformation. And, yeah?
Just jumping ahead, how much does this approach depend upon this assumption of assuming independent Gaussian noise in each pixel, which has got to break down to reality?
That's right. Everything I'm showing you today is assumes that. And if that's, you know, if you're not modeling it correctly, then it's going to break down at some point. So I'll talk about that at the end. All right. Or if not, you remind me. So this is white Gaussian noise. All it says is I take the image, and I subtract from it the projection along this particular direction of the kappa volume here, and compute the sum of the squared differences of all of the pixels, and put that into a Gaussian function, and that's this probability. Okay, so this is the probability of observing a particular image. It says this is what the image is assumed to have underlying underneath all the noise, and so this difference is supposed to be just noise, and so this distribution is just describing the probability density that you had, the particular set of noise pixels that you got. So these are all the parameters, and this is the main probability. We take the log of that, and then we compute its expectation multiplied by this probability of the hidden parameters. The probability of the hidden parameters is gotten from this same function. It is just the ratio of this at a particular value of phi and kappa divided by the sum of the integral over all possible values of phi and kappa. So this is just the probability that, given your image, that you'll find particular orientation. So this is the probability that a particular orientation and the particular underlying structure are the right one. Okay, so here's what maximum likelihood 3D reconstruction would look like. Here's our Q function, which we need to optimize, and the Q function involves then two nasty big sums and integrals. The one in the denominator is the integral over all possible rotations, translations, Euler angles, and a sum over all of the different volumes. And the numerator looks the same thing, except that we are weighting this error as a function of the orientations and the function of which volume. And so this Q function is just sort of this weighted average of the squared errors. So it turns out that solving this problem isn't horribly difficult. And I'll talk about the case where people used algebraic reconstruction to solve it. All right. Before we go to that, let me do another simple example. And this is going to be a 1D alignment example. So what I'm saying is I now have a one-dimensional signal that is randomly translated along the x-axis, or along the abscissa, and it has a bunch of noise added to it. And so it's going to be the it's going to look a lot like the higher dimensional things. The way I get a new estimate of the underlying average of these many instances of this signal. Oh, this is not in your notes.
Is Z sub I a shift distance?
Z is a shift distance.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know what? Let me show you the picture, and then we'll go back. So here's the underlying signal, this green line, and I've added to it some Gaussian noise, and then this is what I'm trying to reconstruct. I started with a random seed, so this pulse is winding up in a different place than where it should have been, but that's what I'm trying to do. I have signals that I'm assuming have a random shift that I'm calling T, and so I'm trying to align them and then reconstruct the underlying shape of the thing. So this is what the EM iteration looks like. My new estimate of the underlying signal is equal to a weighted average of the original signal shifted by this transformation T. So I shift by Z. Actually, the way I wrote this, this should be a minus Z. I shift it back to the right place. So with a weight according to the probability that particular shift was the right one. And I compute those shifts just by the an exponential of these errors, and left out minus signs in each of these cases too. But these aren't in your notes, so you're not going to read them. And okay, but you see what's going on. Okay, so let's look at the problem. This is a case with a pretty good signal to noise ratio. The size of this pulse was the same as the standard deviation of the noise. So here the blue here is an example of one of the signals, and this is this probability of Z curve actually for three different signals, and you can see each of them has a really sharp peak right around 50 units, which is the size of the shift to take this over to there. So this is kind of the standard alignment problem. We're finding the best match of a template, which is this, with the signal. Do a cross correlation, find the cross correlation peak. This peak is really sharp, and so then we just copy this. We just shift it over, add them all up, and when you do that to 10,000 of these, you get a nice signal. Now, if the noise is bigger. Okay, if the noise is bigger, this distribution is broader, and that means that kind of switching function is more gradual. And the way that shows up here is at a lower signal-to-noise ratio, I don't just get a single peak always in the same place. I get a variety of different peaks. Okay, so this is, again, this probability of the shift function. But as I do all of these shifts and adds, I still get a reasonable signal. In this case, this used 10,000 of those sweeps. This used 100,000 of those sweeps. And you can see it reconstructed something. Here's a really hard problem. Here the signal is only a tenth of a unit, whereas the noise is standard deviation of one. You can see these probability functions are all over the map. I used a million of these signals to do this so-called reconstruction, and it's still kind of noisy. So you can see that one of the things that's going on here is in cases where the alignment is very ambiguous, we have this probability function is really kind of spread out. We still get the right answer, but we need a huge number of data in order to get it. So this is a result that would be impossible to do by the normal alignment, because the normal alignment would just pick, you know, the single peak of each one of these of probability functions, and the peak of the cross correlation is the same as the peak of this function, and so you'd add those up, and that would just be noise. Okay, so let's go back and talk about what's involved in 3D reconstruction. So in January of this year, Shores Sheris and Jose Maria Carazzo's group did an amazing feat, which was to actually implement the 3D maximum likelihood reconstruction. And it wasn't perfect, but this is something that I thought was going to take a long time for anyone to be able to do. It was probably the biggest EM algorithm problem ever run. You know, just think about 100 million data samples being all of the images, 500,000 hidden variables, on the order of 1 million elements of the model. And so this is the size of the problem they did, 90,000 ribosome images. They use pretty big steps. And the reason they use big steps is that they have to do this integration over every orientation. They didn't do CTF correction. They reconstructed 4 volumes, 18 CPU days per iteration, and they did 25 iterations. They were able to simplify the problem a little bit. So this thing took 6 CPU months. But as Joachim showed you, it came up with a very nice result, classifying or reconstructing 4 volumes. 3 of the volumes looked the same, and one looked different. Now, even more cool is that the same group now in October has improved their algorithm, correcting one of the real disadvantages of the previous one, because they're now doing CTF correction. The cost of this is it runs several times slower. And it's still not, a statistician would say, well, this is still not perfect maximum likelihood, because solving that equation for Q is really a non-trivial effort. Okay, so why do we expect so much from maximum likelihood estimation? Well, first, because it's a black box, involves lots of computation, and we don't know where else to shove our problems, so we shove them here, right? I've talked about a 1D case and a 3D case, so we'll just for completeness talk about a 2D case. Let's think about the 2D case where we are trying to just compute the average image from a set of images that have to undergo some kind of translation and rotation. And by now, you should be kind of used to these. This is the re-estimation formula for obtaining an estimate of the underlying data image. It's just the translation and rotations times the probability of that particular translation and rotation. And that probability is just one of these Gaussian things. The nice thing, of course, is that this probability, which would otherwise just be the hard assignment, is a graded function. And so I showed in a paper a long time ago, that there's the well-known result that, regardless of what your underlying structure is, if you have data with a terrible signal-to-noise ratio, if you start with the wrong reference, you get the wrong answer. And if you start with another wrong reference, you get another wrong answer. But under the same conditions, maximum likelihood can give you the right answer. And I think that all has to do with the fact that you're not making hard choices, but instead you're using this sort of graded function, which, if everything's tuned up right, winds up dividing your distribution into just the part you want. One thing you should notice, though, is that in this particular problem, whereas the alignment's pretty much stabilized after about 50 iterations, maximum likelihood converged really slowly. This had to go about 300 iterations before you saw something. And that's another phenomenon that I want to point out, which is the harder the problem, the more slowly the EM algorithm converges. And so in that case, in that 1D problem I was showing you with 1 million data points, I had to do 100,000 iterations in order to make that converge. Yeah.
So for this whole issue of time and that it takes so long, I assume it's parallelized.
Oh, yeah. So
6 CPU months so bad?
Well, no. You know, if you have you know, 180 processors, then you can do it. But that was also a pretty easy problem. You know, coarse angles, pretty small, you know, everything increases as some high power of the size of the image. And it's easy to compute how hard it gets, because this is just a plain exhaustive search over all Euler angles, translations, and confirmations. So, you know, it can be sped up. You know, you can throw lots of computer power at it. You can also try to do clever things in doing some of those integrals. So I want to talk for a minute about some work that I've been doing with a mathematician collaborator of mine, Hemant Tagari, who's working on the multi-reference 2D problem. And here the re-estimation is the same kind of thing. The next estimate of the mean, that is the underlying true 2D structure of the jth 2D structure, is one of these sums over all of the images, and integral over all the translations of this quantity divided by an integral. So integral of the weighted average of the images divided by the sum of all of the weights to normalize it. And so this is another one of these things where you have an exhaustive search. This is now only in a 3D space. And the question is, could one do this whole search a little bit more intelligently? Now, you saw in the 1D case that if you're lucky, if the signal-to-noise ratio is good, this probability function, this weighting function, is very sharply peaked. And so you would expect that you don't have to integrate over the whole space. And we were thinking about, well, what would be a good strategy for sort of finding the places where we do need to integrate and skipping over the ones that we don't. So the strategy that we're doing is that we first integrate over a very coarse grid, and over this grid we also interpolate the logarithm of this probability, which is actually just the cross-correlation function. So over this coarse grid, represented by these black lines, we compute the values only, let's say, at the corners of these squares, use a cubic spline to get in between, integrate this probability function. Then we take each of these terms of the integral, and we sort them, starting from the very largest to the very smallest, and say, okay, every cube where one of these terms is big, we start with the very biggest and go down the list, we're going to divide up into a much smaller, so we use an 8 by 8 by 8 smaller cube and do the integral finally there. And so the result of that in a problem that's reasonably non-trivial is a speed gain of 20 or 30. So that's the idea there, is to just try to do this integral of this function, which is really high in some places and really low in a lot of other places, in an intelligent way. Now, the nice thing about the maximum likelihood framework is that because you're making a formal definition of the problem, you can kind of hang anything you want onto the formal definition. So, you know, before I was talking about this idea that we have images. Images is the set of actual observable data, and then we have this set of hidden parameters. Let's add a new hidden parameter. Let's say that, you know, the model that we're trying to optimize, thanks Ava, is some kind of high resolution 3D structure, but we think that a better statistical description of the model would be to say that we have a rigid body movement of this thumb back and forth. And so our model would say, if it were atomic, we would say we have the atom positions of all of this when this rotation angle is zero. And then we add as a new nuisance parameter an angle theta, which would be the rigid body rotation of this part of the system. Then our set of parameters that we would optimize would now be the unbent volume, and maybe some statistical description of the size of these continuous motions, the mean angle and the standard deviation of this random angle of rotation. So all we've done is added two more little parameters to our parameter list that already has maybe 100,000 parameters. So that's no big deal. The computation becomes much larger, but this would be a nice way to handle conformational heterogeneity in cases where we think that some kind of big rigid body motion is going. So it might take, 10 times more computer time, but who cares about that? Angie. Yeah.
And would that be a good approach, or is it going to start to create some arguments?
Yeah. I mean, the only guarantee that the theory the theory of maximum likelihood says, if you give me a maximum likelihood estimate and you have a lot of data, I can give you the best possible result from those data that anyone can, using any method. Now, whether that result is good enough for you is something that you can't say a priori. What I forgot to tell you is that you can get confidence intervals. What you do is you tweak one of the parameters a little bit and watch what happens to the likelihood. The likelihood will go down as one of the parameters deviates from one place or another, and you can get confidence intervals. And so you can get things kind of like the errors that you would get in a least squares process. But getting back to this, so, what would be really cool would be to take Powell's, what did you call the conformational modes. And so he has all of these modes. Some of them happen together. Some of them don't happen together. And so he makes a covariance matrix of his motions. And so instead of just computing the sigma, you could have a whole covariance matrix, which tells you how big is the motion in each mode and which modes are coupled to each other. And that's still, maybe 100 more parameters for, 5 or 10 of the modes. It would then be, a whole lot more computation, like 100 times more. Yeah.
Also, regarding the Carrasco algorithm, you have to pick the number of seeds. Will it be possible to have that as a computational
parameter? Yes, because what you can do, this is something that's called the likelihood ratio test, and it's often used. So you have a model that has too many parameters, or let's say you have a model and you start out with a very simple model, just say one conformation. And then you say, let's run it again with two conformations. You look at the likelihood that comes out from that second one, and you just compare the likelihood. Did the likelihood get, a whole lot bigger? Is it 10 to the 10th higher than the first one? Well, then looks like there are two. And then you might add a third seed, and the likelihood might go up by, only a factor of 10 or something. You say, well, there are ways to kind of guess what is statistically significant in that case. So you do this likelihood ratio test of nested models. Those are the buzzwords. And see whether the increased model complexity is worthwhile.
Yeah. So getting back to sort of the question I asked earlier, how sensitive do you think this is to your assumptions of noise probability?
Yeah.
Because many times people have bizarre ideas about probability. The best example was when I got into an elevator on a rainy day once, and one person said to the other, it's a true story. Boy, they said there was a 30% chance of it raining, but they were wrong. So you collect that and you make some estimate of probability.
Yeah. So if you think about a problem like this one, it becomes harder and harder to estimate the means of each of these Gaussians if those means are very close together. This is a well-known, very hard problem. Two mixed together Gaussians that are close together. And in that case, your only hope of getting a good estimate is to have a very precise description of the noise.
But here you have a prior estimate that there are two Gaussians and not three or one.
Yeah, right.
So where does that come from?
Yeah, well, that's that, that's one of these things where either you have the prior knowledge or you do this sort of likelihood.
Prior assumption, yeah. Wrong.
Yeah. Right. So that's why you in general you do this likelihood ratio test and try every possible model. But anyway, if those means are very close together, then you'd better know very well what the variance is and know that the variance of those two distributions are the same and so on, or else you're going to make a big error. And so that's kind of the analog of the issue of, well, if you don't have a good model for the noise, then you're likely to you're likely to get a wrong value. David?
The other question, the reconstruction algorithm you use is not part of maximum likelihood.
That's right.
So is it possible you could test reconstruction algorithms using this because you have different models and people treat them differently? They put out, a soft, like Joachim talked about, putting some kind of soft thing to cut out the noise and so on and so forth. And you get an estimate of which model is more likely.
In principle, yes, but it's a little scary because, I'd want to put the soft thing in my ML in my EM loop of ML2. Yeah, right.
Leave that out. So just ask about CERT or backweighted R projection or straight least squares inversion matrix or wavelets. Take your pick.
Yeah, you could. Although that's probably something to do when a more rigorous ML reconstruction is done, because there are approximations in what Shores and Carrazzo have done, which are probably not bad, but those need to sort of be verified. But in the end, sure, this could be the gold standard. You do your quick one-day reconstruction, and then you go run the big cluster for a couple months to do the verification. Yeah.
I was hoping that you could comment on another problem that doesn't bother me. The problems that we tackle are basically discrete. The equation that we present, that they're integrals.
Yeah.
If you look closely at Maria's work, they use this old strategy in which projections, directions are discrete.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's one thing that we've been doing is we've been saying, even though we only evaluate values, say, on these vertices, we're trying to do a precise numerical integration in the spaces between the vertices based on some interpolator. So we're trying to get closer. But you're absolutely right. I mean, at some point, this is discretized. The only hope would be that you could discretize it finely enough so that then you could have an analytic interpolation in between. Well, it's maximum likelihood in a discrete space. Okay. Good. Thank you. Okay, so concluding remarks. I hope I've shown you a little bit in these examples that everything gets harder at low signal-to-noise ratio or at high ambiguity. The convergence is slow, and having a very precise model for the noise becomes increasingly important, including underlying assumptions like uncorrelated white noise and so on. The EM algorithm has this wonderful mathematical proofs concerning it, but it's only guaranteed to find a local maximum. It seems to be a little bit better at finding a local maximum than conventional methods, but that is actually an empirical result. As I was claiming, the maximum likelihood estimate is asymptotically optimal in the limit of infinite data. You should be able to provide correct estimates even with abysmally low signal-to-noise ratios. But the well, it's faster than the square. Computation time is proportional to the number of data, but the number of data that you need as the signal-to-noise ratio goes down increases very, very rapidly. And finally, maximum likelihood does not solve all problems. And so these are my coworkers. Andy Barthel is a grad student at Hemant Tagari, who's a professor in our diagnostic radiology department. Thanks.
More questions? David?
I assume with multiple confirmations, if you had two sort of confirmations.
So if you had two confirmations, you would just take the probability that an image was in one and stick it in that reconstruction, the probability that it belonged to confirmation two and stick it in that. So that's relatively straightforward.
Yes. So, and, I don't know if you really like these pictures, but I really like this picture because this explains the whole conundrum that how come when you compute a value like a mean value of one of these distributions, you're actually taking a weighted average of all of your data, including the ones that are wrong. And the answer is that if the switching function is chosen correctly, the switching function sort of fills in the part of the distribution that you didn't know.
Yeah. Hi, Fred. How does your initial guess correlate to the number of iterations you need to do? Does it, if you ran your reconstruction in Spider or Eman first and feed that in, does it reduce the number of iterations, or have you at least tried it in the 2D case?
The convergence is more or less sort of exponential. But it makes a big difference if the number that you're exponentiating is, 0.1 rather than something like 0.99. So it helps to have a good seed, and also the extent to which you find a false maximum is still an unknown problem.
I just wanted to just want to make one point. One can always make a decision on where to stop with this division. With this maximum likelihood method, because one can then switch over to the ordinary refinement algorithm. So it makes a lot of sense to make a coarse division, like in the case of the ribosome, to 64 squares, then do this kind of essentially a coarse classification, because the domains involved are very large. And the changes are very big.
Yeah.
So one can really cut corners in this way as well.
Right. So your strategy is to say we do the simultaneous optimization of several different volumes, and then we just do a hard classification of the particles.
Right.
And in any of the cases where people are doing it now, where the signal to noise ratio is good enough to do a regular reconstruction, that's probably just fine. And if the signal-to-noise ratio were worse or the differences were smaller, you'd reach a point where doing the hard classification would give you errors.
I think Ken was next, yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could give us some insight on the importance of the noise model. For example, what happens if you would not do the type of CTF compensation that Nico mentioned, or if you get a
right. no one's looked at that. All I can say is I think it's important, and I think, you know, actually Nico's looked at that. Nico has a very nice way to make the noise well behaved, and that is he just designs a filter that flattens the power spectrum of the noise. So then he's got maybe a distorted signal, but the noise is right. He can go through the whole algorithm, and then at the end he can undistort the final result. So I think that's a
so
nice approach.
That flattens it in frequency space, but what if it's asymmetric distribution in
amplitude? Yeah. Well, that's messy too. I mean, as a first approach, you could say, well, I'm just going to skew my distribution. But yeah, I mean that gets scary. In principle, you can make the noise model reflect Poisson counting statistics. Not sure what the equations look like. Yeah.
Well, I have one last question that Sharon's looked at this also.
Mm-hmm.
One of the papers I thought they made a point about the CDF still present in their data, and they thought that their ML estimate was a little lumpy.
Yeah.
Because of this.
Yeah.
We can have one last